Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bond Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Dana, head of growth at Sauce Group, a serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me here is Benedict, co-founder of Jamie, an AI meeting assistant. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Anna.
Sure, absolutely. Can I share my personal story with Jamie? Because I'm a user.
Yes, of course.
So full disclosure, right? Tim Schumacher, founder of SaaS Group, also an investor in Jamie. And one day he basically just sent me an email, something like, "You've got to try this." And I was like, "Okay, all right, what is it?" And then I was like, "Okay, man, like it's another note taker. Like there have been too many. I've tried them all. I've interviewed founders and they're pretty much all the same. There is a bot, there is a transcript. What are we doing here?" And then I tried. And it was very different. And yes, I am a user right now and I love it. And I do have a couple of feature requests, but we'll get to it. But yeah, loving the tool. But that said, it is a very saturated market. And I wonder how you decided to do it, but maybe let's start with your background.
Yeah, sure. First of all, can we take this as a testimonial?
Yes.
So maybe quickly on myself. So Benedict, 26 years old, originally from Cologne, Germany, went on then to study international business in Maastricht and did an exchange also in Paris. And actually next to studying during my first year together with my best friend Louis and co-founder, we decided to build the first B2B SaaS products. That was more than 5 years ago. And since then, of course, things have changed a lot. We've built different products, pivoted a lot, moved to Berlin, opened up in the office here. And yeah, now I've been focusing on Jamie for the last 2.5 years.
Oh, right. That's cool. Yeah, I saw that it wasn't your first one. What was the first startup you started?
Yeah, well, the first product we built was called Respond, which was a solution actually to make feedback processes within companies and especially larger companies better. So collect better employee feedback, for example. And then later on pivoted to TeamTap, which was like an internal microblog kind of to share status updates asynchronously. And after noticing, okay, that isn't working too well, or there is a more exciting opportunity actually out there, we decided to pivot to Jamie.
Okay. All right. So why note taking? There are many tools. Are you not satisfied with them? Did you think that, there is something to add? What's the idea behind, going into that space?
Yeah, very good question. And also one I get quite often. I think one thing that's important to know, I think when we started was 2.5 years ago. It was a couple of months before ChatGPT was released. So therefore, there weren't too many AI products out there and also not too many AI note takers at that point. The ones we saw that were out there were working okay in English, but not in any other languages. And also always had this bot joining the calls, which of course kind of distracts the meeting, but also then limits the use case to only online meetings. And we noticed, like when building the previous product and when I was taking notes a lot, that this is a super repetitive task and the GPT models were out there. And this is something that can be automated. And therefore, we ran a quick experiment. We actually took the team, which was very small back then, went into an Airbnb and decided, okay, at the end of the week, we want to see whether there's actually a demand for that and properly validate the idea. And then after a week, we put up a landing page and asked everyone in our network to share it and collected a couple of hundred signups within the first days and people messaging us, reaching out to us that they really want to use the product. And therefore we decided, okay, maybe it's time to build that. And we pursued it.
Awesome. I just had a podcast like a couple of hours ago with a founder, and I asked them how did they validate the idea? Because previously we also had a podcast with Jason Fried who said, "You know what? The first iteration should be yours. It's your idea, and then you put something for the customers. And maybe then, you know, you start getting feedback. And the podcast that we had after, the founder said, yeah, I mean, the validation is only when they pay. So yeah, of those customers, my favorite question ever, of those users, sorry, they reached out to you that they want to continue using this, they want to become customers potentially. How many actually converted?
Very good question. I don't know the exact number, but one thing we did is we put a price point on the website. So when you sign up to the wait list, you actually knew that there is going to be a price tag to it. And one thing which we did, which was not necessarily the validation in terms of getting money, but we asked for their time. So what we did, we onboarded the first, I think, 1,000 users actually in 15-minute calls. So kind of like Superhuman did it or still does it. And then after a week, we also did a feedback call with them. So that had this two benefits, that people were actually giving some investment into the product, which kind of showed some validation. And of course, there were so many learnings for us included in those 15-minute chats, or in total then 30 minutes, which was super valuable. So I think, first of all, staying a price point on the website, even though not charging immediately, and then also getting the time as an invest.
That's interesting. And this first product, the first MVP, what kind of features did you put there? Like, how did you know what you want there? Was it just research? Was it something, again, that you wanted yourself, or maybe, you know, customers, potential users that told you about it?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, it was just something that we wanted to ourselves and maybe heard from a couple of users and customers. But then having like probably 100 calls per week, we of course iterated quickly over it and then changed the product based on the customer feedback. But at the beginning, it was just like a real, really simple summary and very, very basic. Also not tremendously valuable, I would say, in the beginning. But yeah, it was a first version out there. And we also saw the first conversions after a couple of weeks.
That's great. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, you said, you know, ChatGPT got out there and it was just an influx of any tool and every tool in the world, copies of all the tools that we know. And, you know, all the users developed such a FOMO. I mean, I still have it, honestly. I want to interview like so many founders that are building with AI now, because there are more and they're so exciting. And yeah, I feel like users just wanted to try it all and not, you know, miss out on anything. So how did you make sure that this influx of the first customers, users that you got actually stuck with you?
Yeah, I think in the end, like, it all comes down, like, what helped us a lot in the beginning that they stuck with us was, I think, this personal connection and actually having talked to all of them, which is something that helps, and which also, if you build like a first MVP, customers that personally know you are way more forgiving in general than if they just download it from an anonymous website. So I think that was helpful in the beginning. And then in the end, I think it just comes down to delivering value and also building good user experience around the product. I think this is tremendously important, because there are many AI tools with the same promise, I would say. But in the end, what's also helpful for a product like ours, I think, is that meetings are such an integral part of everyone's, or not everyone's, but everyone in our bubble workday. So therefore, they engage with the product quite often during the day. And therefore, it quickly becomes a habit and they get used to a certain product, which creates then some switching costs, and also the knowledge and information which is in our product after a couple of meetings, of course, makes also people stick around.
Yeah. And where did you put the product first? Like, how did you advertise? How did you distribute it in the first place to get those customers? Was it LinkedIn? Was it reaching out personally, like you said, or anything else?
Yeah, I think currently like our growth, 90%, 95% even has been organically. So that one thing that we did in the beginning was, of course, leverage the network, which we had at that time already. from building a couple of products before. So that was super helpful. And also like the business angels we already had on board at that point. And then we started to focus on SEO very, very early on. And that worked actually quite well and also very quickly, which is quite unusual, I would say, because for a typical like startup, just like launching, SEO is not the first growth channel maybe you would go to, but we started seeing it work quickly. So therefore we decided to focus on it more. And I think also the timing then was quite well, because after ChatGPT has launched, for example, there was a general awareness of what's possible out there, and the search volume started to increase. So therefore, with us being already there on Google and ranking there, we could benefit from that.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting point. It's very fascinating how everything is changing. All right. So yeah, about about FOMO, and I asked you about the FOMO from the customer perspective and from the user perspective, but I also want to know about your own, because I feel like as a founder, you also have it, because models change and requirements change, and you kind of want to keep up, and you have competitors who might have also gotten some money from the investors, and they've been around a little bit longer. So how do you guys stay focused, and how do you figure out the fundamentals and real value that you're bringing to customers first before dispersing into anything else?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I think that is something that we've learned the hard way, because there was a certain point where growth was quite slow. And we tried to do kind of everything at once. So we tried to do everything at once on the product side. So ship new features here and there, and then also launch different growth channels. So focus on 5, 6, 7 growth channels, because we thought, okay, if we do more there and if we invest in more channels, we will grow, of course, quicker. But then at some point, I think there was like, I don't know where it came from, to be honest, but there was this tipping point where we decided, okay, no, that's actually not the way to do it. And let's have a look at what actually works and double down on that. And for us, this was SEO. So we started to invest heavily on SEO and build up a team there, put out more content out there, and also professionalize everything on that side. And on the product side, it also meant, okay, why are customers actually buying from us? Because they want good meeting summaries in the end at that point. And we decided, okay, let's focus on this core experience and actually double down for the next couple of months to really make this core experience better. And once we decided actually to do that, growth started to increase by quite a lot. And also customers were more satisfied. And in the end, of course, as a product-led or product-driven company, the product also heavily impacts, of course, the growth. So that was a very, very important decision for us, but also something which we've done wrong before by trying too many things at once.
Okay. Which one of the growth channels like failed spectacularly?
That's, I'll need to...
Trick question.
Yeah, I think there are also many reasons why growth channels can fail, of course. Sometimes maybe you also just need to stick to it longer and it would have worked. We don't know, maybe we've given up too early. But one thing that we've done in the past was, for example, socials. So we did like a lot of organic social media content, TikTok, Instagram. And we noticed, okay, this isn't working in a time frame that we've expected it to work. But I wouldn't say it failed horribly. We decided to cut it then at that point. But okay. Of course, maybe this is also a long-term game as SEO, and we could have stick to it a couple of more months and it would have worked. We don't know. But yeah, we stopped it.
True. Yeah. I mean, TLDV, right? Your competitor has been growing on TikTok and Instagram. And at the point I did an interview with the founders, I was like, okay, that's interesting. Like, I would never think that a note taker would grow through those channels. That was so weird.
Yeah.
But I think they had a good strategy. But like you said, you know, you never know. For us at SaaS Group, we had a hypothesis that, you know, Twitter, X, whatever, Blue Sky would work because they have, you know, these indie communities that have historically been very active. And, well, that failed spectacularly because... I don't know. It just, it never worked. Maybe, like you said, we could have stuck with it a little longer, but I don't know. We didn't.
What do you actually see in the portfolio companies? Do you usually see it that one growth channel works very well for one company? Or do you actually see that most companies have like 5-6 different ones that work well?
Good question. And it's very different for different brands, because we have something that is pure like dev tools. They're very different kind of animal. And then on the other hand, we have something like Rewardful, which is an affiliate software. And for them, social media webinars are just amazing because people want to see how it's done. It's still very much about personal connections and people want to figure out how to work with them. So yeah, it's definitely not 5 or 6, but we try to do 2-3 to make sure that, you know, we cover a little bit more, but then we do have a bit of a sharper focus.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. I think one probably is a little bit too little because of external factors then come in. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. All right. Then, you know, I have a question to you about fundraising, obviously, you know, because after Tim introduced me to Jamie, he also told me that he was an investor. And I was wondering why you guys decided to raise funding. Is it because, you know, it's a wave of AI and you want to be one of the first movers? Is it, I don't know, what is the reason?
Yeah. So, I mean, our funding history is also quite interesting because it has been over several years now in different steps, currently like only angel and angel funds. And I think at the beginning, of course, it helps to gain traction quite quickly and also finance the product, building it, building out the team. I think that's also where we of course used most of the funding for so far. So very much on human resources, even though we're still like a quite small and lean team. And especially, I think what I found to be very useful is as a first-time founder, it's of course an incredible opportunity to work with experienced business angels and entrepreneurs who have gone the way that you want to go yourself and learn from them and learn from their mistakes, get sparring on certain topics. So I think also this knowledge component and experience is something which is super valuable and which I would recommend actually to everyone to get business angels on board that have gone a similar path and that can support.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I did this funny post about Tim and Jamie because when we did a podcast with him, he was so excited talking about you guys. And I took a screenshot because he looked like so happy. And I said, well, get somebody on board who would look at you like Tim Schumacher looks when he talks about Jamie.
And yeah.
Yeah, it was super funny. And, you know, I'm really glad that this is an experience that you have with him. But, you know, also getting good investors that will support you is a bit tough. But I also want to ask you about the whole process that you went through, because, yeah, again, you're in AI space. And yes, investors were hungry to invest in AI. But let's be honest, nobody's stupid. And, you know, how did you guys stand out?
I think that changed a little bit over time. First of all, I would say we don't have anyone that has hopefully invested into us because of FOMO and because of the AI wave. I think especially in the earlier days, of course, it's pretty much, you know, it's hard to say it about oneself, but it's like a lot about the team, of course. And I think at the even earlier days when we were building products before, I think there were some investors which didn't fully understand what we were doing or building and didn't fully understand the idea, but kind of trusted that we will build something meaningful in the end, even if it takes some iterations. So I think that's just, of course, the answer for the early days. And then later on, I think with Tim, actually, it was first that he became a user of Jamie, then he became a customer himself, also then with World Fund. And then afterwards, the investment came and we decided to work together on that side. And therefore, the product kind of convinced there, I would say, a lot. And I think that's also a benefit that we have, because our product can be used by anyone and by any investor. And I think that's a large advantage, that we don't need to explain the problem too much. We don't need to explain the benefits too much, but we can pretty much say, hey, try it out yourself. You have probably also tried different tools, but let the product speak for itself.
Is it in a way also a blessing in disguise that, like you said, you're kind of a product for everybody? Because it can be a bit of a nightmare to market.
Yeah. I mean, that's something which we see, of course, on the SEO side, right? And where we see, okay, anyone that Googles, for example, AI note taker signs up to our product, hopefully, and downloads it and tries it. And therefore, there are so many different customer segments that are using the product. But I think from how we look at it is we view it from two different sides. So one is the kind of go-to-market side, where SEO can be quite generic, I would say, to some extent. But then, of course, when it comes to building the product and deciding on the features which we're going to build, I think we need to be quite opinionated in that regard. And of course, narrow it down a little bit, because you cannot build a product for everyone. So you do need to decide there on, like, for whom to build and what features to prioritize.
I just Googled you, AI note taker, and you guys have, you are on the third place, which is impressive for this term. But are there any tricks? Like, okay, AI note taker, very straightforward, very easy. I knew what I was looking for, but are there any like tricks up your sleeve, like what to rank for to win your customers?
I'm not sure about any specific tricks, to be honest. I think you would probably need to invite Leo to the podcast. He's the expert in SEO on our team. So he can probably talk for a couple of hours also about it, also about tips and tricks.
Okay. Yeah. And to be completely honest, it wouldn't be me interviewing him because...
And maybe we should do an SEO specific episode.
Exactly. Let's schedule something. But it's just, I'm always curious because, with SaaS Group, we've been through hell and back trying to figure out what, you know, founders could be looking for. And eventually we came to a conclusion that nobody really Googles how to get acquired. Mm-hmm. So you have to be smarter than that. You have to offer a bit of a different content. But it was such a revelation, because as just a user of Google, you're like, you're putting a simple how to or why or whatever query and hoping for the best. But yeah, there are just so many different tips and tricks to use.
Yeah, I think also I think what we did is we focused really on the problem also. Like, for example, okay, how can I save time in meetings and then start to rank for keywords like this? Or, for example, get more out of your meetings, for example, or like really focus on, okay, what impact does Jamie actually have? And then kind of connect this also to the search, to the keywords.
That makes sense. All right. So are you guys planning to raise more? Like, what's going on? Are you more on a sustainable path and now profitable and bootstrapping your way further?
So we have the philosophy to only raise when we actually need it and to not just like raise for the sake of raising. And currently we're growing very well, very quickly. So could be that we will raise again, but yeah, not actively raising at the moment.
Okay. All right. So one more thing that I wanted to ask you about is your social media strategy and building your own brand, because once I started using Jamie, I also started following you guys on LinkedIn and, you know, reading your posts and trying to figure out how you grow there, if you grow there. And I wanted to ask you, how did you decide to leverage LinkedIn and how did you start building your brand? And if it even, you know, has an effect on Jamie and getting new customers?
Yeah. So I think for us, we pretty much use social media just to document the journey of building Jamie and doing that also in a very authentic way and not just putting some posts out there for the sake of posting, but really documenting also the ups and downs and learnings. And I don't have the exact numbers because also it's something we recently changed in the onboarding. But from what I've heard in terms of building a brand, it has quite some impact. People talking about it or saying, hey, I've seen it on LinkedIn, for example, which of course then has some benefits, and especially in regards to like word of mouth. And also when it comes to hiring talent, I think that's also where LinkedIn is super powerful, so that if people have heard about us, about also our culture, about what we're building. And I think as the team is like the most important part of building a company, and especially in the early days, I think this is also another benefit of documenting the journey.
Agree, 100%. You guys also have a podcast, and I found out about it very recently, but it's also just 3 episodes. But
yeah.
So you're at the very beginning, which is super exciting. But I was wondering why you decided to do that. And because, you know, I feel like sometimes we talked about this so much when I was starting, if it's a distraction or, you know, it actually helps with branding, with connections, with some kind of partnerships, like you said, employer branding as well. So what was the purpose for you? And do you feel like it can be a distraction?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, we only have 3 episodes out there so far. So the distraction hasn't been too bad at that point. I mean, reason why we did it, I think we all in the team are like absolute productivity nerds. So we like to constantly improve. And therefore, I think it's always super interesting also to speak to other entrepreneurs, investors, builders, executives in general, to hear how they actually work and what tips and tricks they have up their sleeves, which they can share with an audience. And I know since we're building also a productivity solution, our audience is quite interested in that topic. So I think that helps. And also, of course, when we have exciting guests, once they post about it, spread the word about the podcast is also something where it's helpful and gives us additional reach. So far, I would say it's worth it, but I think we can check in on that again a couple of months out, once we've done maybe 10 or 15 episodes. But I would be curious, of course, to hear also what you think about it. And I mean, you've done it now for quite some time. So how has it been working out?
For us, it's great. I mean, when I started, that was kind of the centerpiece of everything. And then everything else, like social media and blog posts and events and sponsorships, partnerships, kind of just sprouted out of the podcast. But yeah, I was just curious why a SaaS founder would do that. But yeah, I completely agree. It's great conversations. It's good to build relationships. What do you, coming back to the productivity nerdiness, podcast is a lot of work. Do you guys automate it somehow? Asking for a friend.
Actually, not too much. I think the briefings a little bit, and of course the topics that we talk about. Then I actually yesterday played around with the product, where I just put in like a 15-20 minute conversation, but I'm sure it can also work for a podcast, which is a little bit longer. And it gave me like different snippets with the highlights and topics discussed. I just played around with it briefly. I haven't tested it in detail yet, but so far it seemed quite promising. So maybe this is something which we will automate in the future. But other than that, actually not so much yet. But I think also we don't do it on a level that you do it. So it's quite still, it's not too much work yet.
All right. That's actually something that we discussed with Tim as well. He was like, you should have Jamie on the background when you do the podcast. And I think it's a great idea because, like you said, there are like little snippets right away. Jamie gives you like ideas what to do next. And yeah, that's one of my favorite parts about it. But yeah, to be completely honest, I just forget every time. I was like, oh my God, I have the founder of Jamie coming and I have to run Jamie finally on the background. And well, what do you know? I forgot. So...
So our notification wasn't working too well, I assume.
Yeah. I don't know. But I just, completely backed out. But yeah, interesting that you're thinking about this too. Any other AI tools that you guys are using either to automate your workflow or to actually develop Jamie?
Well, of course, when in the product development team, we use different tools to just make everyone faster. And that actually has quite some impact. And I mean, there's so many nice products out there now. So I think actually you're being left behind if you don't use them, because they just add so much value and speed. Then I think on the customer success side, we're doing some automations when it comes to like first responses. So this is something which of course saves a significant amount of time. And then I think just everyone has kind of their own tools for their different workflows. For example, we just kicked off outbound sales, have some AI features there in certain products which we use. And then everyone on an individual level uses maybe, of course, ChatGPT or other tools on the SEO side. I think there are also some amazing products which can help you write better content, which is SEO optimized actually. So yeah, I think those are like the different areas.
What are your personal three top AI tools?
My personal top three, I think, despite Jamie, of course, I would have to say just basic ChatGPT, to be honest, which I use for many different areas of my life. So not only work related, but also when it comes to sports, for example, and want to get like a nice plan on how to work out or whatever. I think it's helpful there. And then I'm a big fan of Superhuman and their email client. And they also have some nice AI features, which are super helpful.
Okay, that was three. Okay, Jamie counts.
Yeah, I think actually we were just talking about it over lunch today with the team. And we all kind of noticed that we don't use that many AI tools personally, which is quite interesting and a little bit counterintuitive also. But for me, it's really superhuman, ChatGPT. Well, Jamie, but of course, very biased on that side. But that's pretty much it.
What about you? Now that you said it, absolutely. I don't really use AI tools in life. I do use Perplexity.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, a note here, I don't really use Perplexity. My son uses Perplexity because when I don't really have time, I have like an urgent meeting or something. Perplexity serves as a babysitter. Mm-hmm. So he would just talk to her, like, I don't know. I taught him a little bit how to use it so he can ask for some information and have a conversation, get, I don't know, a tutorial, a lesson on how to draw Pokemons on YouTube and stuff like that. So that's one. But other than that, I mean, does Descript count? Do you use Descript for podcasts?
I don't use it, but I would say it definitely counts, yeah.
Yes, then Descript, ChatGPT, obviously. And I think that's it. I'm trying to look at my browser if there is anything open that I'm missing, but I don't think so. Yeah, no, not yet. Maybe I need to change that. Maybe it's just too many, you know? You have a FOMO, but at the same time, you're like the deer in the headlights. You're like, what to try first?
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up not trying anything.
Yeah, and I think also in the end, it's like, I think many products out there are like being built because people think, okay, there's AI now out there. What can we build with it? And where should we like implement it? But I think even though in the age of AI, it's very important to think about the problem first and then see whether AI can be a solution to that, but not start like with taking AI as the solution to something and then searching for a problem. Because in the end, I think those products will not stick around, and that hasn't worked in the past. And I think this will also not work in the age of AI, to be honest.
That's a good take. All right. I have just a couple more questions for you. The usual here, everyone answers them. So hopefully you'll have some time to reflect. What has been with Jamie, and it can be your personal founder journey or the business, the biggest win and the biggest failure so far?
Yeah. So biggest win was actually the launch. Once we've set ourselves a goal of the amount of signups we want to achieve within the first 24 hours. And then actually standing there with the team and watching the counter go up and then hitting that limit, which was kind of the threshold to when we're going to pivot. That was definitely the biggest win, I would say. Biggest failure when looking at my entire founder journey, I would definitely say building products in the past that people really didn't care about and building those products by like kind of looking at, okay, what would be nice to have and thinking about, okay, there is a problem, but without like properly validating the problem and then ending up to build something which people didn't really care about and which people didn't want to buy is of course an extremely frustrating experience. And yeah. And then I think with just Jamie in general, there were a couple of failures. So for example, when it comes to, I don't know, some live demos where things didn't work, especially in the early days, which is of course not the best experience when you're standing there and presenting something and then to say, sorry, I need to check with the product team why it's taking so long. But yeah.
Okay, but that's just learning and hopefully, you know, you guys are moving on. All right, so the last question is always about a hack. And again, can be anything. It can be your personal one. It can be something for the team, for the product, anything that works for you and you think other founders may benefit from.
Yeah, I think what I've also when building a team in the early days, I think just being radically honest in every possible way is something which makes you as a team so much faster and so much better. And this not only within the team, like with one another, but also with looking at things. So radically looking at things, okay, what is working and also what is not working. And then also having the courage to act up on the things that are not working, because there's so many things always that are not working. But then in the end, to not be like afraid to actually cut those and move on to something else, something which is my biggest learning, I would say.
Okay, that's perfect. Thanks for sharing that. And thanks for sharing the story. Like I said, loving using Jamie. I mean, honestly, I remember, you know, we always talk about the aha moment. Mm-hmm. And it's very rarely happened to me that I was like, okay, this is it. And I remember the exact moment when it happened with Jamie after the first call. It just asked me to go back and review it. And then when I opened it, it was the transcript and then this little notes and then, you know, suggestions what to do. And I was like, oh my God, you just did everything for me. And that was literally the, okay, loving it moment. So thank you for doing this.
That's super cool to hear. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Sure.
And also for taking the time to speak with me.
Feature request, sorry.
Ah, yes, please.
I loved, you know, the suggestion, like, okay, the next step to do is probably set up a meeting. And I thought, okay, I would so love there to be a button which would say, okay, we integrate with your calendar, we wanted to set up a meeting, choose the time.
Yeah, love that idea. This is something that is coming in the future.
Okay.
So actually automating those kind of tasks directly out of a call or suggesting the automation so that you just need to confirm it. Yeah,
perfect.
Super valuable point.
Thank you. But yeah, again, thanks for being here. You know, excited to see what you guys are going to build in the future and hope to do it again sometime.
Yes. Thank you very much for the nice conversation.
Sure. Thanks and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.